wine. Define relationship. Falling in love, being together, long term. No. He shook his head once. You are correct, I wasn't open to that, not when we met. Oh, really? I crossed my arms, lifting my chin. So what did you have in mind when we first met?
So many things.
He wagged his eyebrows, grinning wickedly around another sip of wine, then added more seriously.
To be honest, I thought you were a long shot. I wasn't open to a relationship with anyone, and I couldn't imagine a scenario, even before you friend-zoned me, where you would want something like that with me.
Why? What made you think I was a long shot? His head reared back on his neck.
Have you met yourself? You're intimidating.
What? No, I'm not.
You are. Your confidence is intimidating because it's entirely valid, and your goodness, and,
his eyes flickered down, then up,
the rest of you.
That had me smiling, so I forgave him for stealing my wine. When did you change your mind? He didn't respond right away, instead finishing my glass while he shifted his eyes up and to the left. Abruptly, his gaze cut back to mine, and I got the sense he was bracing himself for my reaction.
I changed my mind when I came home and found you and Jack in the hallway. Last month.
I stiffened, my heart giving a twinge of protest at the memory, and I dropped my eyes. Crap.
Marie,
I really didn't want to talk about this. I didn't want to be reminded of him with another woman, not when my feelings for him had been so strong even then. It felt like he'd cheated on me, on us. Rationally, I knew he hadn't, but once again, believing and knowing were two different things.
I don't want to talk about this. I shook my head. Too bad.
His hands came to my shoulders, pulling me up from my stool.
Look at me.
I didn't look at him. I was so mad and hurt. My heart gave another painful lurch.
I love you.
Sorry, I shook my head more resolutely. I don't think I can talk about this.
We have to.
Why? I glared at him. Why do I have to talk about the night I found out you'd been sleeping with other women?
Because I don't need therapy to know not discussing things that bother you is a terrible idea.
The set of his jaw struck me as remarkably stubborn. Damn his pushing! Why can't he just let me be the dehydrated horse this time? We can discuss it later. I shrugged out of his hold and walked the pithy distance to my living room.
Or we can discuss it now and have makeup sex after.
That earned him another glare. He glared back, not looking contrite.
Fine.
I'm angry that you slept with someone else when we were spending so much time together. And I was yelling. But once I started, I couldn't stop. I rented a car and drove to my parents' house 3 hours away. I pointed in the general direction of where they lived and cried on my mother's shoulder for 15 minutes. Do you know how much that pissed me off? I haven't cried to my mother about anything since I was in elementary school and Rena Davis said I smelled like a dumpster. Matt twisted his lips to the side.
That bitch. Rena Davis is the one that smells like a dumpster.
I'm serious, I raged. I was then unable to keep the hurt out of my voice as I added, you slept with someone else and it hurt. A lot. Exorbitant hurt. Don't make a joke out of this.
I didn't.
That wasn't a joke?
No, I mean...
He crossed me, lifted his hands to touch me, but I flinched away, causing him to release a frustrated sigh and pull his fingers through his hair.
I mean, I didn't have sex with her. We kissed, but that was it. I haven't been with anyone else since the crazy lady 2 years ago. There's been no one until you.
Startled, my mouth fell open, and I blinked at him for several seconds as this information permeated my brain. You didn't?
No, I didn't.
But, he reached for me again and I let him hold my arms.
Yes, that was my plan. I'm not going to lie. Being with you all the time and not being able to... He ground his teeth. Not being able to touch you, be close to you, but not like I wanted, was extremely frustrating. As much as I loved being with you, I hated how I felt after we spent time together.
How did you feel? I asked numbly, trying to keep up.
Not good. He released a humorless laugh, like I wasn't good enough for you to...
I cut him off with a kiss, unable to bear the rest of his words, and wrapped him in a tight hug. His hands came around me, immediately sliding to my bottom and squeezing, pressing my hips to his. But then, in the next moment, he'd ended the kiss, cradling my jaw in his palms.
I'm not finished.
This is difficult to hear. My stomach hurt, thinking that I'd caused him misery simply by being with him. I want to make it up to you.
Then listen.
I nodded, covering his hands with mine, bracing myself.
Okay.
Okay, tell me.
When I spotted you in the hall, I was happy to see you, as always. But then you looked upset, really upset and surprised, and that confused me. But it also gave me hope.
Oh. I blinked some more, processing his words and trying to figure out how I felt about them.
You were who I wanted, and you were also unobtainable, off limits. But when I saw how upset you were, I made her coffee, apologized for wasting her time, admitted I was hung up on someone else, and sent her home. I texted you about coming over. You told me not to.
That's what made you change your mind about long-term commitment? Seeing me hurt?
No, not just seeing you hurt. I considered what it would feel like to see you with someone else.
Matt released another harsh laugh.
And I have to tell you, it made me feel like shit. I hypothesized there existed a possibility that you were thinking about me the same way I'd been thinking about you, given the way you reacted. And if that was the case... If you were even a modicum as infatuated with me as I was with you.
Infatuated?
Besotted.
Besotted is better. I nodded encouragingly.
If you were besotted with me, even a very little, or were willing to give me a chance at something real, then I'd be an idiot not to try.
Tilting my chin up, he brushed a soft kiss against my lips, his tongue darting out at the last moment to taste me.
I had to do everything in my power to convince you to love me back.
Oh, Matt. My fingers slid to his wrists, my heart fluttering. Why didn't you say something? When we went for coffee that Monday, why not tell me all this then? He gathered a deep breath, his hands falling from my face, responding flatly.
You asked me to set you up with Dr. Merrick.
I winced. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. He shook his head at me, giving me a look of teasing disgust.
How could you?
What? He's cute. I like his beard. I teased back. Matt's mouth fell open with more teasing disgust.
He's a psychologist, Marie.
Then, whispering loudly, he added accusingly,
It's one of the soft sciences.
I scoffed, snorted. Carrie was right. You are a snob. He smiled. I smiled. We smiled at each other, and then I released a sigh. Even though I hadn't realized I'd been carrying around this burden of frozen feelings, with the exhaled breath I felt myself thaw.
See? Aren't you glad we talked about it?
Yes. You were right. I'm glad we resolved that.
Is it resolved?
He asked imploringly, his expression turning stern.
We have to do things in order. I don't want to have make-up sex until all the arguments are done.
But if we save some arguments for later, we get to make up more than once. I reached for the waist of his jeans, widening my grin.
still frowning down at me, although now it looked more like a suppressed smile than a frown. Matt's hands lowered to my thighs, skimming his fingertips up the back of my legs.
You're brilliant.
I know. He placed a feather-like kiss on my neck.
I love you.
I know that, too.
Talk to me, Marie.
His arms came around me once more, squeezing.
You have to talk to me, even when it hurts. Nothing will be right between us if you don't.
I nodded, returning his embrace.
I will,
I said, knowing that not every argument would have a happy ending. Yet I trusted his goodness. I trusted he'd never knowingly hurt me. And I hoped he likewise knew I would never knowingly hurt him. That trust meant we had to give each other every opportunity to prove the other right.
I don't understand why you didn't take Quinn up on his offer to hire a cleaning service.
Greg was holding his youngest daughter, now 11 days old, while helping his son sort through the materials list for middle school and order the items online.
Because, Mr. Fiona, it's more meaningful if we clean the apartment because we do so with love. And Quinn and Janie will have to suffer through our love tomorrow.
Sandra was at the kitchen sink, washing the refrigerator's crisper drawers. All the perishables were on the counter and Alex had bagged up the spoiled or old food for the trash. Meanwhile, I was wiping out the inside of the fridge, scowling at a very stubborn, crystallized bit of goo. What is this? I'm going to need a jackhammer. It was Tuesday evening, and we'd all convened for our usual knit-night gathering. But instead of knitting, we were cleaning Fiona and Greg's apartment, making them dinner and doing their laundry. Quinn and Janie were the only ones absent, but we'd made plans to clean their penthouse tomorrow. Drew and Ashley had driven up from Tennessee. They were only staying for 3 days, but it was wonderful to have them, even for a short period of time.
The second bathroom is finished.
Kat walked in, wiping her brow with the back of her hand.
I think we only have vacuuming left, but I want to wait until Fiona wakes up.
Is Dan still reorganizing Grace's toys? Sandra tossed over her shoulder. Who knew he'd be so into color-coding Barbie doll shoes and arranging Dreamhouse furniture? Greg made a discontented face, but said nothing. I knew he didn't like the fact that Grace owned Barbie dolls. He felt they perpetuated unrealistic and unhealthy ideas about female beauty.
He was helping me in the bathroom.
Kat reached for the solo cup with her name on it and filled it with the filtered water from the door of the fridge.
But yes, now I think he's with Grace in her room, helping organize the toy bins. Elizabeth and Nico are in there too.
Sandra and I shared a look, but said nothing. She'd also noticed the ring on Kat's finger. We'd all noticed at this point, but neither Dan nor Kat were ready to fully discuss the situation.
Where is Drew?
Alex finished tying the two trash bags, addressing this question to Greg.
Is he back from the hardware store yet?
Yes, now he and Ashley are in Jack's room folding the laundry.
Kat refilled her cup.
Has anyone seen our neighbor?
Greg asked the room.
Or have you seen my phone?
Who? The weirdo that tricked Marie into a date? Sandra wrinkled her nose. I paused my work, my neck heaving and my heart doing the twist and shout. I hadn't yet told anyone about Matt and me. Everything was very new, and everyone was very busy. It hadn't come up.
Professor Simmons is a weirdo?
Jack glanced between his dad and Sandra.
Everyone in this room, you included, is a weirdo.
Greg shifted his infant daughter from one shoulder to the other.
He said something about stopping by today when I saw him yesterday morning, but I was too delirious to remember you were all coming over.
Well, then, I'll just go over there and uninvite him.
Sandra placed a washed drawer on a towel next to the sink. Bracing myself, I faced the kitchen.
Don't do that. Be nice.
Alex sent his wife a look as he hefted the two trash bags over his shoulder.
He's cool.
Kat made a scoffing sound, crossing her arms.
I'm with Sandra. I still don't like how he treated Marie.
I shut the fridge. He didn't...
What did he do?
Jack's eyes were now rounded with the interest of a 9-year-old finally allowed to take part in adult discussions.
It's a long story. Greg's voice was grumbly and tired as he scratched his chin.
Why don't you pick a backpack? How about this Madame Curie one?
I moved to the middle of the kitchen and summoned my courage. Why do I feel so nervous about this?
I want Minecraft.
Jack turned his attention back to the laptop.
Ida Lovelace, you say?
Greg closed the computer.
Minecraft wouldn't even be possible without the mother of computer science. Take this into the other room and pick out a backpack that'll make you proud 20 years from now. Go.
Jack dutifully grabbed the computer and left the kitchen. Twisting the rag I'd been using to clean the fridge, I gathered a deep breath and said, Matt, Professor Simmons and I are together. Sandra and Kat stiffened, their eyes swinging to me, stunned shock written all over their features.
What?
Sandra breathed, turning off the water.
Oh.
Alex shared a look with Greg. If I wasn't mistaken, they were both hiding smiles.
What a surprise.
Sandra's gaze cut to her husband.
You knew?
He shrugged, glancing at Greg again.
You knew?
This came from Kat and was directed to Greg.
Who knew what?
Dan strolled into the kitchen and walked straight to Kat, stealing her solo cup and taking a long drink.
Marie and Matt, Fiona and Greg's next-door neighbor, the guy at the hospital last week, are dating. They're together.
Sandra sounded incredulous and wiped her hands on a towel with exaggerated movements.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Dan nodded.
Nico told me.
What?
Kat, Sandra, and I asked in unison.
How did Nico find out?
Sandra swung her eyes to me.
Did you tell Elizabeth?
I shook my head, but before I could answer, Dan said,
I think Drew told Nico.
Oh, my God. I shook my head, so confused. How did Drew find out?
From Quinn?
Alex said as he strolled out of the kitchen.
Quinn told me to.
Well, then who told Quinn?
Kat rubbed her forehead.
I did.
Greg patted his daughter lightly on the bottom, soothing her.
Then who told you?
Sandra placed her hands on her hips.
Greg kissed his daughter's forehead.
Matt.
Matt told you? I stood straighter, feeling surprised and touched. When did he tell you? I'd kind of liked that he'd told Greg. It made me feel warm and fuzzy.
Yes, Matt told me yesterday morning after I remarked on his gleeful walk of shame.
Walk of shame?
Sandra's eyes darted over to me, amusement and a question written all over her features.
Yeah, he was wearing the same suit he'd been in Friday night.
Go, Marie!
Dan stepped forward and offered me a high five, which I returned numbly, amazed at how quickly these men shared information with each other. And, by the way, why would any of them be interested in who I was dating? It didn't make sense. Greg picked a piece of lint off his jeans, looking smug.
But I knew before he told me.
Kat glanced at me, then back to Greg.
How?
Greg smirked at Kat, then Sandra.
It was written all over his face last week for anyone who was looking. Fiona called it, too.
Then to me he said,
We've been gossiping about you two all week.
You and Fiona? I smiled, relieved that Fiona knew. I hadn't been looking forward to telling her, not after she'd warned me away from him weeks ago.
She thrilled.
Greg returned my smile with a soft one of his own, seemingly reading my mind.
She had her reservations, but seeing you together on Friday was all the assurance she needed. We couldn't be happier for you both.
Standing in front of the kitchen sink, Sandra was shaking her head, her eyes unfocused.
Okay, I'm so confused about so many things. First of all, she pointed at me, I need the whole story. When did this happen? I didn't even know you liked him. And secondly, she turned to Greg, what is the deal with you guys and the efficiency of your man gossip phone tree?
Greg gave her a droll look.
Don't be a hater, Sandra. You ladies need to learn to communicate more effectively.
Kat laughed, shaking her head. This is nuts. What I don't understand is why you told Quinn to begin with.
I turned back to the fridge, allowing my face to show how perplexed I was about Matt and me being a topic of conversation.
Are you kidding?
Greg stood and began swaying back and forth, shaking his head at me.
Marie, you saved my life last spring. You saved both Fiona and me. You organized Quinn and Jamie's entire wedding. If memory serves, you also threw a tequila bottle at those Boston guys who showed up to grab Janie a few years ago, spurring everyone into action and effectively saving every woman in this room. Of course Quinn wants to know. And Alex, and Drew, and Nico, and me.
Dan moved to refill Kat's solo cup, adding simply,
"You're a hero, Murray. We want to make sure this guy is good enough."
Inexplicably, emotion clogged my throat, robbing me of my ability to do anything but swallow for a few moments before I managed. You'd do the same for me. You all would.
Exactly.
Greg nodded once, sending me a soft smile that looked foreign on his typically sardonic features.
Which is why I told Quinn as soon as I found out. We're looking out for you, kid. And don't you forget it.
But then he added, "And now you and Fiona have more in common." I sniffled, prompting Kat to cross to me and place her arm around my shoulders. How so?
Now you've both seen Matt's penis.
Chapter 27. Retrieval Robot. A robot that is swallowed and used to collect dangerous objects ingested accidentally. The device is based on foldable robot technology, where the robots fold up, a bit like origami, into small structures less than a few millimeters in diameter so that they can be swallowed like tablets. Then, once inside the body, the capsules enclosing the robots dissolve, allowing the devices to unfold and reconfigure themselves to retrieve the object. Source: Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. An opportunity for Matt and me to prove our trust in and good intentions for each other arrived earlier than I'd anticipated. Once again, we were at my apartment. He said he liked it because it felt like a home, whereas other than a few of Grace and Jack's drawings on his walls, his place felt like a pit stop. Presently, he was sitting at the kitchen table, his hands in his hair as his mouth moved wordlessly, as though reading to himself from the computer screen. I was sitting on the floor by the couch, using the cushions as a surface for my storyboarding notes and biting on the end of my pen. The cuddling story was done and sent, as was the dry-humping piece. The OM appointment was set for 2 days from now.
You know, they have programs for that.
I glanced up from my papers. For what?
Storyboarding?
Oh, yeah. I know, but I like this better. I can see my notes, what I've written, and it reminds me of what I was thinking at the time. I frowned at the paper in my hand. It was from a phone call a few weeks ago, just before my trip to New York, with my writing partner. Tommy had attended an OM session in San Francisco and had already sent me his notes. However, we decided to split up the last two paid services. He took the life coach, and I was supposed to hire an escort. But, again, that was weeks ago, before everything had changed.
You look troubled.
I didn't look up this time. I'm debating.
Anything I can help with?
I heard his laptop close and the scrape of the kitchen chair on the floor as he stood. Taking a deep breath, I let the phone call notes fall to the floor and leveled Matt with a bracing stare. I'm supposed to hire an escort to take me to David's engagement party. He stopped mid-movement, his eyes widening to the maximum diameter as he stared at me.
Come again?
For my story about paid services, I'm supposed to hire a male escort. Rubbing my eyes, I sat back on the carpet and sighed.
Well, okay, that's interesting.
That made me laugh, and I lifted my eyes to his, finding him smiling at me. So, what am I going to do? I agreed to do this before things changed between us.
Do you want to do this?
No. Yes. I mean, I don't know. I want to finish what I started. I want to finish writing these pieces. This whole series was my idea, and it's getting a lot of great feedback. I'm really proud of it. He nodded all through this.
Okay, then you should do it.
Really?
Yeah.
He shrugged.
As long as you feel comfortable, then... If you're asking about my feelings, I'm fine with it.
I gaped at him. I can't believe you're okay with this.
Why not?
Because, honestly, if the roles were reversed, I would not be okay with it. I would absolutely not want you to hire a female escort for work or research or anything else.
Matt smirked at me. Jealous?
Hell yes! I don't want anyone touching you but me. And if that makes me possessive, then so be it.
His smile widened. You know you can trust me.
I know, but it would still piss me off. Recognizing this about myself and being able to communicate as much to Matt without having to worry about upsetting him was amazing. Truly revolutionary for me. I'd never had that with anyone, and I appreciated him so much for it. The trust between us was a gift. And so I decided I wouldn't hire an escort. If I couldn't handle seeing him with a female escort, even for work, I felt it was unfair to ask that of him. He was laughing at me, at my freely admitted covetousness, crossing to where I sat and lowering himself to the floor.
I have no plans to hire an escort.
And no female companion robots either. I lifted my index finger and pointed at him. None of that.
Don't worry, we're going in a different direction. At least I am. I'm focusing on a compassion AI for foster kids. One that will be assigned to them as soon as they enter the system and stays with them through to adulthood.
I straightened, blinking at him, my heart emitting a burst of heat that traveled down my arms and up my neck. Oh. He met my gaze evenly, a small smile on his mouth.
I think that's where I can do the most good.
He'd drawn his legs up, his elbows resting on his knees. I'm sure you will. Cupping his jaw, I kissed him on the mouth, then on his cheek. I'm so proud of you. You were amazing.
Oh? Tell me more.
He caught my hand before I pulled it away, holding it against his face.
Leave nothing out.
Well, not many men would be cool with their girlfriends hiring an escort for research. But it doesn't matter, because I won't be.
It'll be interesting. Besides, I have questions, too.
I stiffened. What?
Yeah. Once Quinn and Alex thoroughly vet him, the three of us can go. We'll just update our RSVP numbers with your ex.
A burst of laughter escaped my throat. You want the three of us to go to David's engagement party?
Yep.
He nodded once, his tone still even, but a glint of devilry lit behind his eyes. Matt.
Oh, wait. You thought I'd be okay with you hiring a male escort and going out on your own?
I pushed his shoulder, wrinkling my nose at him. He caught my wrist.
Oh, no, no. That's not gonna happen. No way. Not unless you take one of my Terminator robots.
Laughing again, I tackled him to the ground. He could have resisted, but he totally let me. Listen to me, I will not be hiring a male escort. Not now, not ever. I kissed him, nibbling on his delectable bottom lip, then lifting my head. If I can't handle the thought of you hiring a female escort for research, then I can't ask you to be okay with it for me. That's not fair, and it's not right.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I was lying atop him now, and he pushed a hand into my hair, using his other arm as a pillow.
So what are you going to do?
I rested my elbow on his chest and my chin on the palm of my hand, considering him. I'll have one of the other staff writers do it. It wouldn't kill me to have another contributing writer. And I can re-interview the guy I was going to use, over the phone and maybe a few of his colleagues. He nodded, his eyes on where his fingers combed through my hair.
If this compromise bothered you, you would tell me, right?
Right. But this doesn't bother me. This feels right.
Good.
He took a deep breath, and when he exhaled, it sounded relieved.
I'm glad you changed your mind about that other thing.
What other thing? I kissed him again. I couldn't help it. His lips were addictive. So close to that chin I loved.
The orgasm thing.
I stared at him, my body tensing. What? His eyes cut back to mine.
The orgasm meditation place?
I tilted my head to the side. No, I'm definitely doing that.
Excuse me?
His hand stilled in my hair, and the wrinkle I found so adorable appeared between his eyebrows.
You're not.
Yes, I am. After a protracted pause, he rolled me to the side, his fingers digging into my side.
Marie, I'm definitely not okay with you going to an orgasm meditation salon and getting fingered by some stranger.
Matt?
No. If you do this, I will be really fucking pissed off.
His voice lifted with each word, and the way he was moving his jaw told me he was serious.
Really fucking serious.
I tried not to smile, but it was impossible. I loved how angry this made him. And what did that say about me? Clearly, I was still crazy Marie. Sick in the head Marie. Loony Marie. The wearing a sweater dress in mid-May and running after my hopes Marie. His eyes moved over my face, and he clenched his teeth.
Is that funny?
Listen. Just listen to me. Abruptly, he sat up, shaking his head. A flush had appeared high on his cheeks. Jeez, he's really pissed. Yay! Matt. He shoved his fingers into his hair, causing an accidental and haphazard mohawk.
I can't look at you right now.
I reached for his arm. There's no touching, Matt. No one is going to touch me. It's all instructional. No one was ever going to touch me. He stilled, moving just his eyes to mine. Several seconds passed, then a few more.
What?
I sat up and straddled his lap, wrapping my arms around his neck. They don't allow people who arrive without a partner to stay for the actual meditation. I was always going to go for just the instructional sessions. No one was ever going to touch me. That was never going to happen. I finished by rubbing my nose back and forth against his. He released a huge breath, wrapping his arms around me and squeezing tightly.
You're going to pay for that.
I tried not to laugh, but it was difficult. Rolling my lips between my teeth, I snuggled closer, whispering in his ear, I love you, Matt Simmons. And I don't want anyone but you to power on my CPU.
I'll start.
Matt lifted his hand. I glanced at my boyfriend askance. Okay, Matthew, why are you here? The OM instructor turned to Matt. Her smile looked gently encouraging. I shook my head subtly, disbelieving of, well, everything that had happened since I woke up. The day had begun like any Monday. Matt had slept over and awoken early as usual to make coffee and get ready for the day. Except after making coffee, he'd rejoined me in bed. And that's when he'd informed me that he'd contacted the OM studio and added his name to the roster as my partner. I don't think I actually believed him until we walked into the building and he'd given the receptionist our names. But here we were, sitting on the floor in a large, spacious room that reminded me of a tastefully decorated high-end yoga studio. And Matt had just volunteered to go first, sharing his reasons for attending the session.
I'm here because I'm interested in self-improvement and strengthening my relationship with my partner,
he said with his trademark honesty and lack of embellishment. I kept my eyes studiously forward, trying to mask my smile and the warm blush staining my cheeks. He was the best. The absolute best.
Thank you, Matthew. Anyone else?
We went around the room, each person taking a moment to say something about ourselves and explain what had prompted them to try orgasm meditation. One woman shared that her ex-partner had wanted only intercourse, and she'd had a difficult time encouraging him to engage in foreplay, that he would rush or make her feel guilty for wanting it. She said it had affected her relationship with her current partner, who was with her, and that she needed to relearn how to experience and trust playful touch. Her partner said he wanted to be supportive and encourage her journey of self-discovery. One man spoke up to say he couldn't achieve orgasm unless he masturbated, and even though he grew hard with a partner, he could never finish inside someone.
He hoped orgasm meditation would help him relax, focus more outwardly, and truly engage with another person. A few women said they wanted to become more in tune with their own bodies, what brought them pleasure, and what they liked. Another of our group said he was there because he wanted to improve his technique, which drew a few amused chuckles. One of the couples explained that they'd been in marriage counseling for the last few months, wanting to save their 13-year marriage, and realized they'd never really talked about sex, what the other person wanted or expected, so they thought OM would be a good place to start the dialogue. I swallowed, my throat suddenly dry. I hadn't expected everyone to be so open, candid. I hadn't expected, well, normal, everyday people. Part of me had expected exhibitionists and hedonists, horny people looking for a cheap thrill or damaged people looking for an escape. Shame on me. Finally, the instructor turned to me. Marie? I managed a smile, but it felt too big. I'm here because I want to know more about orgasm meditation, I said, swallowing stiffly. My heart beat strangely in my chest, somehow both racing and sluggish. I felt everyone's eyes on me, as though they expected more. More of a reason for my presence. More sharing? More. Or maybe I expected more. For myself. And maybe that was my problem. And because, I blurted, bracing but unable to stop myself, when I'm intimate with someone I can't seem to stop thinking about whether he's having a good time, I can't... I glanced at Matt, finding him studying me with surprise, but also concern and reassurance. I worry that I'm being too selfish, and I have trouble getting out of my own head to fully enjoy myself. As I continued to speak, the surprise dissipated from Matt's brow, leaving a small smile, his eyes infinitely accepting. Compelled by his compassion, I returned his smile with a hesitant one of my own. Thank you, Marie. Our instructor gave a small bow, turning her attention to the rest of the class. You are not alone, and your feelings and worries are not atypical. But the goal here is to feel, without shame or judgment. This isn't about gratification. There is no finish. There is no climax. There is only feeling, trusting, listening to your body, and meditating on the lessons you learn. As I told Matt, only the people who'd brought their partner were able to stay for the guided meditation. What I didn't tell Matt was that I was dreading the guided meditation. Seriously, seriously dreading it. Those who'd arrived on their own participated in the sharing session, the lectures, and the discussions, but had to leave once the last theory portion was over, which had been my plan. I'd wanted to learn all about the practice, but hadn't wanted to actually do it. Not in a room full of strangers. I didn't want to share that part of our intimacy. I was selfish of him, of us. So as the day wore on, I grew more tense. I knew he sensed it, but how could I tell him that I didn't want to go through with it? He'd taken a day off work, and I was going to, what, turn his generosity into a waste of his time? No. I can deal. I can power through. These were the thoughts on repeat in my head when our instructor warned us that we had 5 more minutes until the last break was over. That meant everyone who'd arrived alone would be leaving. Matt found me chatting with one of the other couples, doing my best to wear my journalist hat. He'd excused us both and pulled me away from the group, into the OM studio to the main room where we'd be doing the guided meditation in a few minutes.
Gack! I've been doing some reconnaissance.
Matt leaned close, whispering in my ear. It was all becoming very real now. Pretty soon I'd be lying on my back with my underwear off, my legs spread, and Matt's fingers on my body while I did my absolute best to meditate on what my body was telling me. I was pretty sure my body was telling me to take my sexy boyfriend and flee. I glanced around the empty space.
Why are you whispering? We're completely alone. Everyone else is outside in the courtyard.
It's more exciting if I whisper.
He rubbed my back, smoothing his hand from my shoulder to just above my bottom. I'd noticed, since I'd made my confession earlier regarding my fears about being too selfish, he'd been especially handsy. I wasn't complaining.
Fine, I whispered, playing along. What kind of reconnaissance?
Turns out, some of the people who arrived alone are planning on meeting up later to try out OM without the benefit of the guide.
Interesting, right? It was interesting. It was very interesting, and would definitely make it into my article. Good job, partner. That's excellent information. Thank you.
His gaze grew intense, as though he was trying to impart his thoughts without speaking them.
What?
He sighed, clearly irritated that I couldn't yet read his mind.
Marie, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I felt my eyes grow wide and I held my breath but said nothing.
Say it.
He dipped his chin, his hand caressing me lower, over my backside, sending lovely tendrils of desire unfurling in my belly despite the anxiety churning there.
I don't want to disappoint you, I blurted.
And?
My forehead fell to his chest and I spoke to his feet.
I don't want to stay. I wasn't planning on staying. I want us to leave. I don't want our intimacy to be clinical. Not that this would make it clinical, but I'm not ready to do this kind of thing in a room full of strangers. I want hot sex.
His hand had come back to my face, cupping my jaw, and he tilted my chin backward when I'd finished. Gazing at me, a whisper of a smile on his lips, he kissed me once.
Then let's go.
You took off work.
To be with you. No judgment for the couples here, but I prefer not to digitize you in front of people we don't know.
Digitize. Nice.
I know, right? I'm going to use that one again.
He lowered his head, covering my lips with his, giving me a soft, sensual kiss. He tasted me with a slide of his tongue, moaning into my mouth when I encouraged him to deepen the kiss, pressing my body against him. I melted, becoming more liquid than solid, and twisted my hands in the fabric of his shirt. Abruptly tugging on my hair, he broke away with one biting nip.
I love you, Marie, and I want you to be selfish with me.
Giving in to my smile, I nodded. Okay. Then, when we get home, I want you to make dinner.
Sounds good.
Naked. He paused, one eyebrow lifting in surprise.
Sounds good.
And then after dinner, I want you to talk dirty to me.
Matt's gaze grew hooded, and he entwined our hands together.
Why wait until after dinner?
Later, close to midnight, when we were lying in bed together, cuddling, naked, I traced the outline of his handsome face with my fingertip, feeling amazement. Here, now, touching him as I pleased, my heart swelled with the sweetness of it, with gratitude. I hoped I would never take these moments for granted, never take him for granted.
You like my face?
He sounded certain. No, I love your face.
I love your face, too. And your bosoms.
That made me laugh, and I dropped my hand to his cheek. Look at me. He complied, his eyelashes fluttering open until his gaze focused on mine.
Beautiful,
he said, the single word full of wonder. Abruptly, his hand began stroking my hip and bottom, as though the sight of me made the action compulsory. Thank you.
No, thank you.
His eyes followed the progress of his fingers as they slid to my lower belly, then up to the valley between my breasts.
Tell me something.
What?
Tell me what you want me to do to you.
How about you finally administer that questionnaire? I teased.
His hand paused and his gaze jumped to mine. Yeah. About that.
What? Don't tell me you don't want my data.
Oh, I do. But I can't have it.
Why not?
Because we were explicitly forbidden from becoming involved with anyone who was consented for the study.
It took me a while, but the full weight and meaning of this revelation finally sunk in. You mean you didn't consent me or administer the questionnaire all this time because you wanted
to impregnate you, yes.
I smacked his shoulder lightly and chuckled at his silliness. Because you wanted to be with me? He ducked his head, also smiling.
Exactly.
You are something else. I was unable to stifle my grin or the heated delight coursing through my veins.
I kept putting it off. At first I told myself it was because I wanted you to feel comfortable with me, so you'd give me honest answers. I also told myself I was being so nice to you, hanging out with you so much for the same reason.
But then, his gaze moved back to my body and he lowered his head, placing an achingly tender kiss between my breasts.
Then I stopped lying to myself and admitted the truth. I wanted you. All of you. All the time.
Even more than you wanted to work? I teased.
Yes.
He nodded somberly, his focus still on my body, and I threaded my fingers into his messy hair.
It's funny.
He placed another kiss on the side of my breast, saying absentmindedly,
"People, when they're connected to the cloud, the internet, they zone out on real life. But an AI can only function when it's connected to the cloud, because they have no real life. They are more real to us than they are to themselves."
That's deep, Professor. I tugged on his hair, forcing his eyes upward.
It's seductive to live in a virtual space, especially when the real world isn't what you want it to be.
His gaze moved over my face, and I got the sense he was speaking mostly to himself as he said,
"You, being with you, was the first time I wanted real life over a virtual existence. You distracted me. I'd never been distracted before."
"You distracted me, too." His stare sharpened, finally focused on mine as he positioned himself above me, an imposingly masculine presence, making my heart quicken. My legs fell open to cradle him as he lowered his strong body to mine and gave me a playful kiss.
"I want vacations with you."
He nuzzled my nose,
"with no internet connection."
I mock gasped. "Are you sure we're ready for that kind of step?" He licked my bottom lip and rubbed his growing erection against my center.
"I want candlelit walks on the beach and sunset dinners."
"There's something wrong with your user interface," I said on a pant, instinctively tilting my hips, chasing the feel of him. I was going to correct him, tell him it was candlelit dinners and sunset walks on the beach, but speech suddenly failed me. He grinned.
"Oh?
Yes. You need to input the device."
"Why?"
His eyes danced as he moved above me, making me crazy. The need was building within me. I couldn't focus on words when he rolled his hips like that. Nevertheless, I tried to tease. "I need more RAM." Matt barked a surprised laugh and then devoured my mouth with a hungry kiss just before sliding into me, filling the empty ache between my thighs. I gasped for real this time, tilting my pelvis to take more of him as he pulled away and planked above me.
"You want this firmware?"
His voice deepened to a reprimanding growl as he stroked me unhurriedly, making me crazy. "Yes, please. Hard drive, hot sink, boot disk, computery words." I arched my back, my eyes closing. I could take no more of the sight of him above me. It was too much.
"You are so fucking sexy," His movements were slow, deliberate, rhythmic. It was the best kind of torture. "Harder, please," I begged, my breath hitching. He didn't comply, instead demanding, "Tell me you love me."
"I love you."
He increased his tempo, but kept his thrusts gentle. I whimpered.
"Tell me there is no end to us."
"There is no end." Matt rewarded me with a rough roll of his hips, making me cry out,
"Tell me this is forever."
His voice was tight with restraint and emotion, causing me to open my eyes. Immediately, I was arrested by his expressive, gorgeous gaze, equal parts possessive and vulnerable. Reaching for him, I guided his mouth to mine and kissed him once, my hand sliding down his back.
"I'm yours. Forever. And I'm yours."
He swallowed, so earnest, so sincere.
"You are my person,"
I whispered, feeling the rightness and inevitability of the words. He huffed a laugh, made complex with unspoken desires and hopes, and nodded.
"Yes, Marie, I am your person."
I felt emotion prickle behind my eyes and my mouth curve into a beaming smile. Goodness, how I loved this man. This funny, sweet, amazing, remarkable man. I loved how he made me feel, like I was the most beautiful woman he'd ever known, both inside and out. He not only felt right, he felt like he'd been made especially for me, and I for him. For the first time in my life, I was encouraging my hopes. I allowed them to run and fly to the sky, to the stars, because that's what my life was going to be from now on. Matt, me, and perpetually soaring hopes.
Epilogue.
Mind-reading robot. MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory made a robot that responds to a human's brain signals. The robot can sort various objects, making choices based on the brainwaves of a person wearing an EEG, electroencephalogram, CAP, who is watching the robot work. Source: Massachusetts Institute for Technology. Invention is the fruit of desire and or disinterest. Most people don't realize, but desire and disinterest are closely related. Desire as a motivator is obvious. Think rocket ships and porn. Disinterest as a motivator is less obvious, but might be the more powerful of the two because we, humans, hate to be inconvenienced. As an example, I've always been disinterested in clothes. The quality of, trends of, price of. Winter, I needed to be warm. Summer, I needed to be not naked, yet still clothed, because of laws. But now, shopping for clothes is one of my favorite things to do.
"I like this tie on you."
Marie held up a strip of silk against me, her knuckles brushing along the fabric of my shirt, and tilted her head to the right side.
"The color brings out your eyes."
"Does it?" I captured her hand, holding it in place against my chest, and stole a kiss. She tasted like cherries because she was wearing something cherry-flavored that made her lips shiny.
"Yes, it does." Marie smiled, her face close to mine.
She did this. When we shopped, she looked at me for a prolonged period of time. She touched me, often. She stood close. Sometimes she whispered in my ear. Thus, I didn't shop for clothes. I shopped for the process of shopping for clothes. I remain disinterested in clothes, except for suits. The buying of the suits months ago was done with one goal: make Marie think of me in suits, which, according to her own admission, were synonymous with non-platonic thoughts. I knew now,
now that we'd discussed everything after the friend-zoning in great detail, that she'd been having non-platonic thoughts about me well before I'd worn my first suit, and that the suits hadn't been the catalyst for her feelings, but I still wore them. Because Marie liked me in suits. She looked at me differently. She looked longer, and showing her she's worth the effort is important. She is important to me.
"Do you even need a new tie?"
She stepped away, regarding me with suspicion.
"Didn't we just buy you 4 last month?"
I don't recall. Obviously, that was a lie. We have the faculty dinner next week, and I need something for that.
None of the other ones would suffice?
I should make a good impression. Most of them think I'm still an undergrad. I've come to understand clothes matter to most people because society decrees how a person is packaged, reflects the internal values, abilities, and personality of that person. This packaging is often called personal expression. Since deciphering this concept, I've resented personal expression. As a child, what did my clothes say about me? They said, "I'm irritated that you people want to judge me by what I'm wearing, and therefore I think you're really fucking lazy." But they also said, "My housekeeper does my laundry. She irons all of my clothes, including my jeans and t-shirts. My gardener likes grunge bands and always brings me concert shirts. My driver thinks I should wear belts with shorts, and my nanny picks out my clothes." However, when I became a teenager, I realized actually not giving a shit and wanting to look like I didn't give a shit were two very different style choices. Funny how that happens. Funny how, in order to project to the world who you are, you're often required to behave in an opposite way. But I digress. My disinterest in clothing was the catalyst for my first AI. Instead of allowing myself to be forced into spending precious minutes daily to ensure the clothes I wore reflected my internal values, abilities, and personality, I developed an algorithm to do it for me. Using data available via image search and defined parameters regarding individuals I wished to mimic, the program created a virtual closet of clothes. I sent the closet to my mother's personal shopper and had her purchase the items in my size. The housekeeper then arranged the purchased goods, complete outfits, on hangers in my actual closet. Instead of thinking about what I should wear, I outsourced that decision based on coded procedures. Because I was disinterested. Because I desired to save time. The unintended consequence of this little time saver was a big cash payout. I showed it to the computer science mentor my senior year of high school. He showed it to a friend. That friend showed it to a group of angel investors. They wanted it, but not a teenager as a CEO. So I sold the program upon my 18th birthday, thereby allowing me to sever all connections to my parents. I haven't spoken to either of them in 12 years. I'm not sure they've noticed. Thomas, my shrink, told me their disinterest in me as their son has everything to do with their own psychosis and nothing to do with my value as a person. I believe him, primarily because he's the expert. He has a PhD. And even though I still think of behavioral science as a soft science, the guy knows his shit. Secondarily, I believe him because I respect him, because he is both intelligent and good. All data indicates he is to be believed. But again, I digress. I pushed my fingers into my pockets, a trick I'd learned early on around her that helped me keep my hands to myself. I made a mental note to never again shop on a Saturday. The store was busy and I couldn't touch her where and how I wanted, because of laws. My left hand came in contact with a small velvet box within my pocket. I fiddled with it, twisting it, running my finger along the seam. The box. It had been in the pocket of whatever pants I was wearing since the weekend after Carrie and Marcus had visited, since Marie told me she loved me. Not wanting to plan something cheesy and elaborate, I'd been waiting for the right moment. She shook her head and returned the tie to the table. "I think you have a tie habit." I shrugged, not denying it, instead allowing a slow, meaningful smile to claim my mouth. I did have a tie habit, and we both knew it. Ties were versatile in their applied uses.
As an example, I had more ties in her nightstand drawer than I had in my closet.
You're bad.
Her smile mirrored mine, though her cheeks were now pink.
You like me bad.
I bent forward to brush my lips against hers. She gave me a wistful sigh.
Come on, let's go.
Where are we going?
I let her tug my hand from my pocket and pull me towards the exit. You're taking me to lunch, then home. Fiona gave me a new cake recipe, and I've been wanting to try it.
That had me standing straighter and my mouth watering. When it came to Marie's cooking, I was a Pavlovian dog. What kind of cake?
You'll see. I arranged our hands so that our fingers were woven together.
If it's her coconut cake, we should definitely buy a new tie.
Why?
I'll have to tie you up until you agree to marry me.
She laughed, and time stopped, just a little.
Pragmatically, I knew it was impossible for time to stop just a little. Time is relative and can be slowed down theoretically, but cannot be halted. Not outside of a particle collider experiment gone horribly wrong and/or a black hole.
But when Marie laughed, when her mouth curved in a perfect arch, when her eyes became the combined colors of hydrogen on the visible light spectrum, when the manifestation of happiness as perfect music passed her lips, then time stopped. Just a little. I've never been a funny guy. Not purposefully. Not until Marie. Not until I heard her laugh for the first time. Everything about it was addictive. You have to want to talk to people in order to have an occasion to be funny. And there were only two things I enjoyed as much as talking to Marie. One involved her cooking, the other involved her body, and both involved eating.
I know what I like, I shrugged, licking my lips, poised to pounce as soon as she finished pressing the white shavings to the frosting. I have no shame when it comes to coconut.
Her tone was flat, but also teasing, and she lifted an eyebrow at me.
Yes. I was hovering, but no aspersions ought to be cast on account of my hovering. She knew how I felt about coconut before she made the cake. Nothing about my hovering should have been surprising.
You're coconut crazy. For your birthday, I'm going to get one of those coconut bras.
I blinked, then stared at the most amazing woman on the planet. Not a controversial claim.
That would be so awesome.
She chuckled, wiping her hands on a towel. I was already reaching behind her for the plates.
Are you finished? Can we eat?
Nah-ah, she pushed at my chest, backing me out of the kitchen. Not yet.
What? I sounded panicked because I was panicked. I'd been forced to watch her bake for the last 3 hours, the alluring aroma of toasted coconut and baked coconut permeating the air. And now we weren't going to eat it?
Perhaps she was a closet sadist.
I can work with that.
Marie steered me into the bedroom. I want you to take off your clothes.
I immediately removed my shirt, then unbuckled my belt, not needing to be told twice. Please tell me we're going to eat that cake naked. I bent to her ear and whispered while I unzipped my pants. Off each other.
No, she shivered, then added, maybe. I don't know. Possibly.
I kissed, then bit her neck. She shivered again.
Okay, yes, we can do that. But first, she braced her hands on my shoulders and held me away. First, you need to lay on the bed.
I lifted an eyebrow at her command and the nervous tremor in her tone.
Marie, please?
She was biting her lip now and had dropped her hands from my arms, twisting her fingers.
I need to do something and I need you to lie down.
I inspected her. She was definitely nervous.
Okay, fine.
Stepping out of my pants, I laid on the bed as instructed, tracking her every movement as she reached into her nightstand with lightly shaking fingers and pulled out a length of rope. She reached for one of my hands and I stiffened.
What's the rope for?
She'd never tied me up before.
It's not rope, see?
Marie trailed the edge of it over my abdomen, placing her knee on the mattress next to me.
It's knit, and made of silk and bamboo.
It's fancy rope.
Now we won't have to ruin your ties.
I don't consider them ruined.
She huffed. It's very soft.
It's soft, fancy rope.
Marie set her teeth and glared at me.
You've tied me up. Why can't I tie you up?
After months of being regulated to the friend zone, I don't like the idea of my movements being restricted. The side of her mouth lifted, but her glare persisted.
Listen, just give me 5 minutes, okay?
I examined her, the stubborn set of her jaw and her appearance of anxiety.
Why are you nervous?
She huffed again.
You'll find out once I tie you up.
You'll release me if I ask?
Of course.
She touched my wrist again, and this time I allowed her to secure me to the headboard. Once that was done, she reached for my other wrist and tied it as she straddled my waist. Her breasts, sadly still encased in her dress and bra, were in my face. Testing the knot twice, she jumped from the bed and searched the second drawer of the nightstand. Apparently finding what she was after, she straightened and faced me, her hands behind her back, looking very serious.
Matt?
Valkyrie? A hint of a smile relaxed her features as she sucked in a large breath.
So, we've been dating for a while.
Not long enough.
And I... What?
Her face fell.
What do you mean, not long enough?
Just that we should have started dating sooner.
Oh. She nodded, the movements of her eyebrows telling me that my words had disconcerted her. I crossed my ankles.
Why aren't you naked?
She shook herself.
Oh, no reason.
Then why am I naked?
Because I didn't want you to be suspicious.
That made my eyes widen and made me suspicious. Suspicious? About what?
Stop rushing me. Let me say my thing.
Marie stood straighter and lifted her chin, her eyes darting over my body.
And stop doing that.
Doing what?
Flexing your muscles.
I can't help that muscle. It sees you and flexes all on its own.
She slid her teeth to the side and cleared her throat, her eyes now studiously focused on mine.
So, as I was saying, we've been dating for a while now, and I think things between us are going very well.
That made me frown. That's a severe understatement of fact and is therefore an imprecise ascribing of value. She must have liked my argument because she grinned.
I'm glad you feel that way.
It's not a feeling, it's a fact.
Marie laughed. The sight and sound had me relaxing further on the bed.
Okay, so it's a fact. And given the facts, I think it's time we moved, or at least we considered moving, on to the next step.
Her smile dwindled until it left her eyes absent of humor and hopeful anxiety.
In our relationship.
Before I could question her meaning, she placed one knee, then the other on the bed and knelt next to me, withdrawing a blue velvet box from behind her back. I stared at her, not masking my confusion, as she opened the box and revealed a gold set of square cufflinks with engraved wavy lines.
One is sine, the other is cosine. One is you, and one is me.
Her typically melodic cadence was now tight with nerves.
Marry me?
I stared at her. At her stunning eyes, presently both gray and green, my mouth embarrassingly agape, finally managing to say,
"You... what?"
"Want to marry you."
Her voice broke, wavered, but she nodded with certainty.
"I love you, Matt. I love you completely. I want to spend the rest of my life with you, and I hope that you..."
"Stop."
I shook my head, closing my eyes, squeezing them shut.
Damn.
This wasn't how it was supposed to happen.
7 months. I'd been carrying that ring around for 7 fucking months. And she distracts me with coconut, gets me naked, ties me to a bed, and proposes. Damn it!
I felt her shift on the bed, heard her breathing change, and my eyes flew open. To my everlasting regret, the hopeful anxiety in her expression had been replaced with confused hurt. Thus, my growl of frustration couldn't be helped.
No, Marie, no, don't make that face. Don't have those thoughts. You don't know. Listen, stop.
Ugh. I pulled at the bindings, wanting, needing to reach for her. But I couldn't. Because she'd tied me up with soft, fancy rope. Taking a deep breath and releasing it slowly, I lifted my chin towards my pants where they lay discarded on the floor.
Can you bring me my pants?
Of course. She nodded jerkily, closing the box on the cufflinks and shoving them back in her drawer, then darting to my jeans. I watched her rushed movements, having to grit my teeth to keep from spewing profanities. She placed the jeans over my middle as though to hide my nakedness, and the action drove a frustrated laugh from my lungs. Great. Just great. With still shaking fingers, she untied my right wrist.
I'm sorry, I should have gone with my original plan.
Original plan?
I was going to bake the cufflinks in the cake.
She sighed, shaking her head. But then you said that thing about tying me up until I agree to marry you, and I just thought... I guess I don't know what I thought. With my right hand free, I shoved it into the left pocket of my pants while she worked on the other wrist.
And if you need time to think about it, I completely understand. I know it was sudden, but I saw the cufflinks, and it felt like, I don't know, a sign, so I got them, and...
Now that both of my hands were free, I caught her around the waist and pulled her down, laying her back on the bed and rolling her over.
Marie, I kissed her quickly. You never cease to surprise me.
She nodded, her brow still knit with worry. I kissed her again, deeper, because she tasted fantastic and it felt like the right thing to do in the moment. But before things could get out of hand, I lifted my head, placed the box on her chest, popped it open, and showed her the ring inside, and improvised. Marie Harris, I don't want to think about my life without you. You are the sign to my cosign, and those cufflinks are perfection. So is your cooking. Everything you make is perfection and delicious, and you're delicious. I love how you taste. I want to taste you now, but first I have to finish saying this. I love how you feel. I love your bravery and honesty. I love how fucking smart you are. Sorry for cussing while proposing, but you are so fucking smart. And how good, how deeply, deeply good and sexy. Petabytes of sexiness. Unable to restrain myself, I kissed her again, noting that her mouth was open and it took her a few seconds to respond because clearly I'd shocked the hell out of her. Leaning away, I pushed my fingers into her hair and looked straight into her eyes. To put that quantity into perspective, 1 petabyte is 1,000,000 gigabytes.
Oh, she said, the word more breath than sound.
I sucked in air, suddenly nervous for reasons I couldn't presently comprehend, and prepared to ask the question I'd been wanting to ask, but hadn't because I'd wanted to wait for the right moment.
Marie, will you marry me?
She released a short exhale, her eyes darting between me and the ring, her smile growing massive, and nodded.
Yes. Yes, of course.
In the next moment, she'd reached for my face and brought my lips to hers. We kissed while I surreptitiously removed the ring from the box and slid it on her finger. I wanted her wearing that ring as soon as possible. I'd waited long enough. But now, I understood, I shouldn't have waited. Because every moment with Marie might not be perfect, but it would always be the right moment. The end.
This has been Dating-ish, Knitting in the City, Book 6,
Written by Penny Reed. Narrated by Joy Nash. Copyright 2017 by Penny Reed. Production copyright 2017 by Penny Reed.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.